revoked, so he had to come back again. He came back for his court date on April 6th, and he finally got deported 2 days ago, and he was treated really bad in the Tacoma facility.
You have how many children together? Are they American citizens?
Yes.
How old are they?
I have a 7-year-old, I have a 2-year-old, and an 8-month-old. Hmm.
Matamoros Villalpando, can you talk about the fact that this is a for-profit prison and what difference you think this makes? They're being sued under slavery, anti-slavery laws in Aurora, in a jail there. What about in Tacoma?
Yeah, we know this is one of the largest detention centers in the West Coast and the nation. They make a lot of money out of engaging our families in there, $165, I believe, per day per person. And the jobs that people are getting paid to do inside for $1 a day is not everything that they do inside. We have reports that people are asked to paint the walls or wax the floors in exchange for having a piece of chicken or a piece of candy. And sometimes not even that. They're just promised that, and that doesn't happen. We also have seen a lot of reports that the food is always bad, but sometimes it's not only that. It's the fact that the portions are getting smaller. And when people complain about that, geo guards say, well, there's just too many of you. What do you want us to do?
We have to leave it there, but we're going to continue the conversation after the show and post it at democracynow.org. We're speaking with Matamoros Villalpando with Northwest Detention Center Resistance and the group Mi Gente, and Alexis Erickson, whose partner is hunger striker Christian Lopez. As a result, he was sent to a New Mexico jail from Tacoma. That does it for our broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, our weekly public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of our show that we call the new WHFR Journal. It's a public affairs show. We talk about issues involving Dearborn and the surrounding area. And of course, in Dearborn is Henry Ford College, the place to which we are broadcasting from. That's too many prepositions. Anyway, this is Jay Koronick. I'm station advisor here and host of the new WHFR Journal. And today is Friday, April the 14th. 2017. Mentioning Henry Ford College, we have one of our fine counseling staff. You can't have just classes and teachers. You need counselors too. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And Diane Green has been with the counseling department for a number of years, is one of their senior members, as I am, but I won't get into that. And she would like us to imagine the possibilities. We have you on the show, Diane, every semester, because you have these special career workshops that go beyond the ordinary. And of course, we love that at WHFR, things that go beyond the ordinary. So why don't you tell us about the Careers in Health Professions workshop that's coming up on next Wednesday, April 19th, in the morning.
Yeah, we're very excited about this one. This is actually our 10th annual event, and it's kind of an anniversary of sorts that we've been doing it for 10 years. And this particular one really focuses on our health career, careers and nursing programs here at the college. So we have lead faculty from each of our health careers and nursing program who will be presenting, along with student presenters. We're really excited because over the years that piece has expanded. So each of the programs is, in fact, featuring a student to talk about their experience of being a student at Henry Ford, but also being a male student in a female-dominated program. Mm-hmm. The emphasis for the spring program is really focused on male students. It is open to everyone, including women, but we're looking at the focus on men because these are areas that are still demonstrating an underrepresentation of men in the workforce. So we're real excited about that.
Right. And really, once a male person gets a job in some of these health professions, there's not necessarily any artificial roadblock to them in terms of getting advancement and moving up and so on. It's just that they wouldn't normally consider it, perhaps, at the outset.
That is the key piece, because many of the programs, when you think about a medical assistant, that's one of the programs that is still largely female-oriented. So to want to bring males into the profession, to be visible in the profession, is a very positive thing for the profession. And that's all good.
Plus, there's job opportunities. I mean, there are jobs in these fields. There's not enough people in general, as I understand it, in the wide range of health professions. We need good people to go into those. Some of them are quite demanding. Obviously, in some cases, it's like a life or death sort of situation.
It is.
But it's our healthcare. So we want the best people in there. And there are standards and certification and so on. And so you have to be a good student to learn enough to be good enough to get one of these jobs. But it's certainly... for some reason, an ever-expanding field, more people are sick or not getting proper care. Anyway, whatever the reasons, we have this workshop, folks. Imagine the possibilities. Yes, we do them, as Diane said, non-traditional possible careers for both men and women, and this time it's for men who perhaps hadn't considered a career in some of the health professions. Some of the jobs, as you said, like medical assistant, it's hard to figure out what that is even, and maybe it just seems like, what would that be, is that like someone working at a doctor's office, helping the doctor with the patients?
That's oftentimes the first face that the patient meets. They are there to assist the physician on a variety of levels. On the intake level, they'll do the blood pressure. They'll take the blood. They will draw the blood. They do
samples.
The weight.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They can do the EKG. They do all of that prep piece. So when the doctor comes in, they have much of that information to look at and include in that office visit. The thing that was done with this program, and it might be almost 5 years ago now, it is coupled with a series of business courses that allows the individual to then couple the medical assistant with a business component to earn an associate degree. This particular program is a certificate in and of itself. But the way they've structured the program now, individuals can continue into that business portion of the curriculum and end up with an associate degree in facilities management.
And that's that would be a big help to have someone with that background
your
office,
even if they're not.
There's usually a key person that's doing all the computer stuff, because the billing and the insurance issues almost takes a full-time person, even in just a single doctor's office.
Right.
It's very complicated, and they have to spend a lot of money on computers and software, and at least one full-time person. But, of course, there's the scheduling of the patients, and there's many other things
right.
that they could help with in the office if they had the appropriate background. Just some of the other careers that are going to have presentations about next Wednesday here on campus, Henry Ford Community College main campus: physical therapy assistant, respiratory therapy, radiology, nursing, of course, nursing students, or the nursing students will be there, of course, from the college, and as with each one of the programs, surgical technology. Now, they can't operate,
but they're passing the tools.
They're passing the tools.
The instruments, I should say it correctly, they pass the surgical instruments.
I see.
So they have to
That's
know
important.
All of those instruments and what they're specifically used for.
And not be allergic to latex.
That's right.
They got to wear
that
those gloves,
thing.
Of course. Ophthalmic That's with eyes somehow.
Yes.
Ophthalmic technician. Pharmacy technology, too, is part of that. Mm-hmm. Of course, it looks like Chad Austin from HFC Career Services will be there to talk to.
Right.
There's a complimentary breakfast and lunch for this, folks. And it's got to say, admission is free. It's a great deal if you're considering, if you're a male in this case, and considering, well, you need a career, but you might be interested in some of these if you knew what they were and heard the full background story. It's just a single morning. And it does, let's see, registration Continental Breakfast starts at 7:30 a.m. and the presentations start at 8 o'clock. And they go until about 1 o'clock or so in the afternoon.
Right. Now, I want to say again, while the focus is on males as it relates to these areas of work, it is open should there be women who want to come.
Fine. Yeah. Well, we don't want to be sexist about
that's
this.
That's right. We're being inclusive.
Right. Because I assume some women, they wouldn't know what some of these careers specifically were. And it's a chance to get additional background on it. Okay.
And the other thing I want to point out, this is a Perkins-funded event. And we like to have the community, the greater college community, know that this is a Perkins activity supporting career and technical education careers here at Henry Ford Community.
Right. College had to qualify for that. That's federal money.
Yes.
That helps with that.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Perkins. If there is one, I don't think so. But
Carl D. Perkins.
Oh, there was. Okay.
Yes.
Well, good for him. Now, drop-ins are welcome. So if you just show up at the building, it's a Hackett Conference Room in the Health Sciences Building. That's Building G. Look for the big G, like golly or great or something like that, on the campus. And that's the Health Sciences building. I have to say the Hackett Conference Room is kind of buried in the back.
It is.
There is a quickie entrance door on the south side of that building, but it's usually locked.
Make sure it's unlocked.
Okay.
No, it is always open.
Okay, because we had a communications division meeting there last Friday, and every door was locked except we went by the main office on the first
and
floor
came
there.
Down through.
They just followed through the hallway. So they're promising to open the outside door.
No, they will be open.
Okay, fine. Yeah,
they will be open.
That'll make it easier. But Hackett is a good size room. It holds about 40, 50 people at least.
Yes.
Maybe they'll bring in more chairs. We had it set up in a big circle thing, so there was nobody in the middle. So
yeah.
There's a lot of room
in
there.
We do classroom style.
Right. Yeah,
so
individual
that way
desks
we can accommodate a greater number of people.
Not to mention the food tables.
That's right. Okay. Those are over the side.
And I'm sure a lot of brochures, handouts, and other printed information, too. So Health Sciences Education Center, as they call it, Building G, Henry Ford College main campus, Hackett Conference Room, which is room G150. And there are some signs on different places. And if the doors are all unlocked, it won't be hard to find it. Hackett, H-A-C-K-E-T-T, Conference Room, Health Sciences Building. That's next Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. Now, just so they have enough food and enough brochures and information to pass out to, you can call in advance. It says you can call a Cynthia Anderson. There's an easy name to remember. Her phone number is in the 313 area. Her office number here is 845-9629. She's sort of one of the assistant deans?
No, she is actually... Cynthia is a Perkins employee that works in the student outreach and support office.
We've actually got three people that I know of whose first name is Cynthia. So if you want to call ahead, just to make sure you have a spot, and I'm sure you will, and you could just drop in. But Cynthia Anderson, 313-845-9629.
And also Brenda Redinger.
There's Brenda. Okay.
Yes.
And hers is 845-9617. That's 313-845-9617. Either Cynthia at 9629 or Brenda at 9617. 845 exchange here at the college. We'll work to have that experience. It certainly does look interesting. I think it's he's probably... there's a picture associated with this, physical therapy assistant, perhaps, and there is an attractive young woman in shorts here, and the guy is somehow helping her with her knee.
Yes.
So
he He is delivering the services,
wild.
Yes.
Yeah, guys, you have to know how to control yourselves when you're working with patients, okay? It's got to be very professional.
Absolutely.
Remember that. And they'll teach you that here if you don't already know, because you don't want to give any sort of bias one way or the other to the patients. You just want to make them well. And so it's a very important career area to go into. There are jobs there, so especially for any of the men listening, and these are careers that could be started at pretty much any age. I mean, there might be some age limitations or restrictions on some of the careers. Maybe for physical therapy, you got to be able to do all the bending and lifting to help your patients. Maybe you need a certain amount of physical strength, but pretty much there's no age restrictions on this, so somebody could come back into...
For the most part, not.
Yeah, for the most part. There are some exceptions, of course. Yeah.
And that, of course, is talked about and discussed in the actual training.
Especially in nursing areas, there's questions about that. Which is one reason why they like to hire a few men for nursing staffs, at least, because the men would be typically, usually... accidentally, more stronger if they had to help a patient in some cases.
Some of the feedback we actually receive from women nurses is that they really enjoy having a male nurse or on the floor with them for the heavy lifting,
literally
for
yes.
moving mm-hmm. Patients
sure.
that are heavier,
yeah.
The camaraderie that comes with that as well. So we're starting to see more and more men moving into the nursing.
Well, it'll be a great workshop for people that don't know about the health careers, but especially men considering them. There's 5 or 6 different areas we mentioned, and it's all happening here at Henry Ford College main campus this coming Wednesday, April the 19th. In the morning, starting at 7:30 for registration, continental breakfast, and 8 a.m. presentation start. They go till 1 o'clock when they'll be serving a lunch and give some prizes. Ooh, door prizes.
That's always fun.
Everybody can use a new door, I think. Yes. Bad joke.
That was bad, but
Diana's
that's
okay. So sweet. She laughs at my bad joke. Now, you had something else you wanted to mention, too, here, Diane.
Yes, I just want to also pitch our HFC Spring 2017 Transfer Fair. And this is the first time that we've done this. We have over 30 schools that have registered to come. It's a great opportunity for students who are planning on transferring. We're coming to the end of the school year. Students are wanting to kind of finalize those plans for their transfer for the fall semester. So that's going to be Thursday, April 20th. And it's scheduled to start at 12 noon to 3.
Okay.
There are some breakout sessions, one that will feature the counseling division. There'll be a panel of social workers presenting from the local 4-year programs. And we will have a session for veterans, tips on being successful for our veteran students. So again, that's going to be Thursday, April 20th, 12 noon to 3 o'clock. We're going to be in Building L, the ASCC building. So we're just going to have that whole first floor there. So we're inviting
students. That's our main conference center building.
Yes.
It's just south of the student center here.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we're really encouraging students to come out and have that opportunity.
You need that area with 30 schools.
Yes.
Those are all 4-year schools?
Yes.
Yeah. Of course.
They're all 4-year.
There are ways you can transfer to another 2-year school, but the big question always is going to the 4-year school of your choice. Of course, you in the counseling department, you know that we work very hard to make sure that most of our classes can transfer, and certainly we try to give assistance to students, both as faculty and as counselors, in regard to what we have, what we understand are transferable for credit.
Mm-hmm.
But the programs at those 4-year schools, once they get there, they need to know about those too, in order to choose the right school. And there's many, and of course, I personally would recommend they also visit that school, but to actually talk to their representatives here that day about majors, major areas, or just about their facilities in certain programs too. That would be getting the word directly from them. And then I think that visit to their campus, too,
absolutely,
to talk to people there, too, is helpful.
And also we have articulation agreements with many of mm-hmm. these institutions. So it gives the student an opportunity to have a face-to-face, to ask any questions that are unique to their situation sure. as it relates to those agreements. So we're really excited about that when that's coming
right.
up.
We have many listeners, and so someone might say, well, is it open to the public? Well, it really wouldn't be too relevant to you unless you're already have some freshman sophomore credits, whether they're current or a couple of years old, or if you're here on campus, of
right.
course, and working
right.
in a program, be especially appropriate. Also, you're going to get the latest updates on the transferability and the nature of the programs at these schools that way. So it's things that you might not even be able to find out by going on the internet to the college's website, the university's website, because maybe they haven't updated that as quickly
right,
as they should.
Right.
You never know. So that is the special transfer. Seminar, workshop?
It's just the transfer fair.
Oh, transfer fair.
And I pulled up the list of okay. schools, and mm-hmm. they are all four-year institutions.
Right.
But some of the institutions that are coming are out of Ohio,
uh-huh.
like the
sure.
University of Toledo
of
will
course,
be here.
Right.
Ohio
mm-hmm.
University mm-hmm. Will be here. We're looking at... I thought I saw one other. So they're not necessarily all... Michigan schools, there are a few
right.
that are also included coming in from Ohio.
Sometimes these representatives can even talk about financial aid opportunities. The last time we had someone here, but every week we do have a school or two, a four-year school, actually having a table here and a representative during the day in our student center. And last time I saw someone from the University of Toledo, they even talking about the fact, if you're a student from Michigan, we'll get you a full scholarship. Well, I assume there's other qualifications, but so just because they're out of state doesn't necessarily mean you couldn't afford them.
Right.
Maybe they have special situations for special programs.
U of T, and I know we had this agreement with U of T, where students who attend Henry Ford Community College, transfer to the University of Toledo, they match the tuition. Now, I'm not sure if that's still in place, but those are
yes.
the kinds of
mm-hmm.
things
yeah.
that you want to find out. What opportunities are you making available to me? Students really follow the money. They follow the scholarships.
Well,
they follow
makes
those.
Sense, yeah.
It's so expensive.
Right.
So it gives them an opportunity to have that face-to-face with
I know when I was in high school, I happened to be valedictorian in my class, and so I got automatically a full tuition scholarship from University of Michigan, Wayne State. I mean, just sure, I applied for it, but I'm just saying valedictorians usually get priority on that. However, Oakland University in Rochester not only gave me the full tuition ride, but also full room and board on top
mm-hmm.
of it. So my parents, who didn't have a lot of money, just my dad worked at Chrysler Corporation, Trenton Engine Plant on the assembly line. They said you really have to go there. I was also considering a liberal arts school in Ohio,
uh-huh.
In Yellow Springs, Ohio, Antioch College, which is, I think, now Antioch University. It's changed
mm-hmm.
a lot, but mm-hmm. the point was very expensive private school. I had scholarships and room and board money of over, and this was back in the 60s, $10,000 a year, and it was still too expensive.
Yes.
For a working class family.
Yes.
But that's okay.
Difficult.
It turns out a small liberal arts school like Oakland University was then, I discovered I had all the same range of opportunities and challenges and co-op work experience. And so,
and
you know,
a fraction of the cost
going to an
out-of-state institution.
Yeah. And I went to U of M for master's, so I made up the difference there, I guess. But no, so transferability is very important, but also the range of choices.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to know you have choices in this world. So,
and the other thing that I think students need to be very cognizant of is many of the four-year institutions make scholarship dollars available specifically for transfer
mm-hmm,
students.
Mm-hmm.
If that transfer student has an associate degree, then some of those institutions have dollars that are designated for graduates of two-year programs. And they are able to compete for all levels of scholarship monies otherwise based on scholarship. So there's a lot of money out there to be had. Wayne State, for example, they give big fool rides. So it again, an opportunity for students to find out what institutions have available for them.
And, of course, the counseling department is always open for business here. So
That's
if they have any questions about transferability, and if they can't come to the spring 2017 transfer fair, I'm reading upside down, that's going to be next Thursday, April the 20th, in Building L. It's our Mazzara Conference Center, just south of our student center, right at the front of the Henry Ford College campus. You know, theoretically, you should already be into your sophomore year, but if you're just in your first year of classes
Please come on down.
Right. And a lot of that, because with 30 different schools, you'll be getting the direct information and special workshops, too, for you mentioned for veterans. And so it's not just talking to the individual 30 tables. Can anybody do that actually in 3 hours? Stop at every table and also go to but it's going to be great. It's going to be intense. So hope everybody
They should come with their top five list.
Yeah, probably. Okay, thank you very much, Diane Green, Ford College Counseling Department. Again, for any further information, just contact Counseling Department in general. You can contact them by looking at the hfcc.edu website. And for the Imagine the Possibilities, if you want to call ahead, it's either Cynthia, this is Wednesday morning, at 313-845-9629, or Brenda at 313-845-9617. So, Diane Green, thank you so much for continuing to organize these things and host them. It's very, very important that people get the full story about their choices, and then they can make the best choices.
And I have to point out that on the transfer fair, Dr. Gwen Pringle was the lead on organizing that.
Yay,
so,
Gwen.
Yes,
okay.
Dr. P.
That takes a lot of phone calls to do that.
Boy. Yes.
Okay. So we're going to be back with more on the new WHFR Journal today. A lot of stories from Dearborn and the surrounding area and a few opinions we're going to toss in. Right now we'll take a little break with, I'm going to take a little break, but Jim Hightower has some comments about issues of concern to all of us. Our friendly populist from Texas. Take a listen.
In an insightful song about outlaws, Woody Guthrie wrote this verse. As through this world I travel, I see lots of funny men. Some will rob you with a sex gun, some with a fountain pen. The fountain pens are doing the serious stealing these days. For example, while you would get hard time in prison for robbing a bank at gunpoint, bankers who rob customers with a flick of their fountain pens or a click of their computer mouse get multi-million dollar payouts. They usually escape their crimes unpunished, but not unscathed. After all, it's their constant, egregious, gluttonous thievery that has made banker a four-letter word in America, synonymous with immoral, self-serving behavior. For example, Wells Fargo, our country's biggest consumer bank, has gotten away with paying some fines for stealing millions of dollars from customers in its notorious fake accounts scheme, but it has not escaped the wrath of the Sisters of St. Francis of Philadelphia. This feisty order of nuns, which holds a block of Wells Fargo stock, has been embarrassed and are infuriated by the rank immorality of their bank's executives. They are pushing a shareholders' proposal demanding a full accounting of, quote, the root causes of the malicious fraud perpetrated on vulnerable depositors. Unsurprisingly, the bank's aloof and arrogant board of directors, which had silently presided over the fraud for years, opposes any such meaningful probe. This is Jim Hightower saying, such recalcitrance only intensifies the public's outrage and cynicism toward out-of-control banksters. But the giant worries less about its public image than it does about the reality an in-depth investigation would expose, namely, that our nation's dominant banks have not only become too big to fail and too big to jail, but too big to manage and control. To stop that thievery, they must be broken up.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Question: What do you get when you mix a barrel of fables, a sack of mendacity, and a gross of whoppers, topped with a thick layer of subterfuge? Answer, the fiasco called Trump Care. We're going to do something that's great, the Donald Trump did when he endorsed House Speaker Paul Ryan's bill to displace Obamacare. But Trump Care was great only in the sense that it was a great big bloated concoction of lies. Start with the original lie that right-wing Republicans have harped on for nearly a decade. Obamacare is a total failure. We'll, quote, repeal and replace it as soon as we get control of the national government, they shouted. Then, when Trump happened, he made killing Obama's Affordable Care Act his top legislative priority. Ryan chimed in with a perfect imitation of Chicken Little, squawking that the ACA is in a, quote, death spiral. In fact, the president and the speaker were lying. While Obamacare has flaws that require fixing, overall, it's been a tremendous success. It has reduced by almost half the number of Americans who had no health coverage, benefiting especially many white working-class people who had supported Trump. Moreover, the overwhelming majority of the millions who gained ACA coverage are satisfied and glad to have it. Undeterred, the Trumpsters tried another Chicken Little tale. The health law is doomed, they squawk, because it's been unprofitable for the insurance giants, so they're withdrawing. Bogus! In fact, the profits of Aetna, Cigna, Humana, United Health, and other managed care corporations have soared under Obamacare. The biggest one, United Health, has seen the value of its shares skyrocket by a spectacular 480% since the ACA expansion of Medicaid. This is Jim Hightower saying, that's why Trump is so hostile to truth-based news. Actual facts exposed his lies.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
You're listening to the new WHFR Journal, WHFR.fm, the station making waves. Doing things a little bit differently than other stations here. Well, the two big questions for the day that we're going to answer on this show, not necessarily local, but everybody is asking these questions. First of all, when do I have to do my taxes? Well, I've seen two different opinions, but certainly by the end of the day, April 17th, and that is Monday, but there's a story in the Press and Guide, pressandguide.com, that we have that the tax filing deadline is April 18th, which is Tuesday. So maybe it's midnight on the 18th. Be sure to check with someone or somewhere. That is because that there is some holiday that almost always happens in about this time of year in Washington, D.C., and because of when the 15th falls, and 15th falls on a weekend. So if it's on the weekend, you always have until Monday. But in this case, because Monday is a holiday, at least in Washington, D.C., then Tuesday, I believe at midnight, don't quote me on that. Don't get into trouble. I'm not going to pay your extra tax filing, your late fees here. But the article seems to say that April 18th is the tax filing deadline. And I believe that's also true for Michigan state taxes. I don't know that. Okay. But Michigan doesn't have to worry about the holiday issue. So maybe Michigan's state income tax filing deadline is actually Monday, 17th. I don't know. The article doesn't specify any of these things. Shame on the person that wrote the story. I can read the name of that person, but I'm not going to. It's actually comes from a press release, so they didn't really write it themselves. It's one of these carefully contrived things, but it is a nonprofit organization, the Accounting Aid Society, apparently. I think they're nonprofit. Anyway, they offer free tax assistance at various locations around Wayne County. Now, I don't want to plug them more than just saying their name once, because maybe they are for profit, but they happen to do things for free, but somehow they get some extra money somehow. I'll also just say that I know that there's free tax prep software. Check with your bank or your credit union. They may be able to advise you on how to access that. That helps an awful lot if you have at least minimal computer skills. apparently 70 or 80% of the people that file income taxes, federal government, they just take the standard deduction because they don't want to have to go through all of the rigmarole of figuring up other tax deductions. But if you own a home and you have to pay property tax, at least that's a big deduction, and that can be a big difference. So I always recommend that somehow you either talk to someone who knows, pay the money for tax advice, or use tax prep software, because then you'll be able to find out whether or not, to go the deductible approach is going to save you more money. But that's very important, because a lot of those 70 or 80% of people file, they don't know how to really file, and they just rather use a single card and maybe pay a lot more, maybe thousands of dollars more than what they'd have to if they took all the deductions that they legally qualify for. Certainly, every business who has a tax accountant working for them, they'll take every single deduction they can find. So why shouldn't the individuals? Well, because most people can't afford that kind of tax advice. And that's too bad. That's the one problem with our tax system. Well, there's many, 67,000 plus pages of rules and loopholes, as I would call them, and deductions, and especially for businesses and industry, that makes it patently unfair to an awful lot of people. Also so complicated that most tax advisors don't even know all the rules. Who could? unless it's, you're the lawyer working for your big business, and you got some legislators to actually pass that tax rule to give you the benefit, so you know about it because they did it just for you, and of course you make use of it. But that doesn't work that way for the average person. So on the show, the New WHR Journal, we sometimes have a guest around tax time, not this year, but they talk about the other ways of doing income taxes, or the outright elimination of the income tax and then collecting the money, because you got to have money for federal, state, and local governments, other ways. I know there's no local income tax in Dearborn at this point. But okay, so I won't go on with that any further, but make note of that. If in the midst of the Easter weekend, you also realize you haven't filed your taxes yet, that's something to be concerned about. But it looks like my guess is, and it's only my guess, so don't say Koronek told me I could file on Tuesday the 18th. Don't put it off, too, because maybe sometimes you need a document or a receipt, or you lost a receipt or a W-2 form or something. And, of course, Tuesday is a business day, so probably you can get something replaced quickly, but maybe you can't. It's never good to wait until the last moment. I sometimes do, not always, just because I hate the system. It's so unfair that somebody with two master's degrees, myself, and more than average computer skills, it still takes me about 3 days, well, 5 hours a day, to get it done. It shouldn't take that long. For somebody with two master's degrees, maybe I'm not as quick as the average chipmunk out there, but I really refuse to give somebody else the money because the system shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be that way, and there's so many great alternatives, and we're constantly around this time of year promised by certain representatives that they're going to do something about it. Sure, everybody wants to pay fewer taxes, but the tax system itself and the burden of preparation and deduction rules and so on is so onerous and so unfair, in my opinion, that it's got to change. And we should be telling our elected representatives that at every level, especially state and federal, of course, for income tax, that it's wrong. And either they come up with something to change it, to make it more fair at least, if not lower the cost overall, that we're not going to vote for them again. Doesn't matter what party they're with. We're just not going to vote for them if they can't take care of this, along with a good number of other things that are on my list anyway. Remember, all opinions expressed in the show, and it's just yours truly right now spouting off, are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, faculty, staff, students, or administration. Just remember that. But I do appreciate the fact that no one has told me to stop spouting off at this point. I try to be somewhat fair, but there is patent unfairness built in to the federal income tax system, and that's just they're just wrong, not equitable. Okay, but the bigger questions, and there's two of them. First of all, it is an Easter weekend, and the first question is, why is today, Friday, called Good Friday? What's good about it? If you're a Christian, it commemorates the crucifixion of Jesus Christ and his death at Calvary in the Middle East, say 2,000 years ago or so. And there was an historical Jesus, and it looks like he got in trouble with the law of those days. And we have good historical evidence that he was crucified. Not for a very good reason, though. It looks like he was crucified just because he was blaspheming the gods that were in power, the church structure of the time, implying that he was the Son of God, and therefore better than the Jewish established religion of the times. And so blasphemy, that was the reason to kill somebody. And you thought only some crazy totalitarian Muslim countries make blasphemy punishable by death. No, it started 2,000 years ago. Probably was even before then, and some things that aren't documented. So why is it good? What's good about it if you are a Christian? Because Christ died. He was tortured first, and then he died. All right, so if you look at the great sources of the world, such as Wikipedia, the etymology of the term good in the context of Good Friday is contested. Some sources claim that good simply means pious or holy. In other words, part of the religious observation of the Easter weekend. Supposedly what happened Sunday, say if he died on Friday, Sunday is when his body was supposedly risen. It disappeared from the tomb they put him in. And if you believe the dogma, of course, he rose into heaven 3 days later on Sunday. Yeah. But anyway, others contend that Good Friday was just a corruption of the phrase God Friday. Capital G, God, of course. And the Oxford English Dictionary supports the first etymology that I mentioned, giving of a day or season observed as holy by the church. So there could be a lot of so-called good days then, I guess, because there's a lot of days or seasons observed by the Catholic Church at least, as holy. And it is an archaic sense of the word good. In other words, it's a rarely used definition. But you can think of the phrase like good tide or good tidings to all, some of those Christmas songs. Okay, there's also Good Wednesday, meaning Wednesday in Holy Week, too, that has been used. There's some other examples from other languages and other countries, but that's the answer to the burning question, and why is Good Friday good? Because it wouldn't seem to have been good for the historical Jesus at all, but not in the usual sense. Different meaning there. But the second question, which is more important and a burning question for anyone at this time of year, a Christian or not, is about the Easter Bunny. How did there become an Easter Bunny? Okay. And what about those eggs? How did it happen that the Easter Bunny is thought of in folklore as bringing eggs? Bunnies don't lay eggs. No, they don't. They are mammals. Yes, they are. And so they give birth the way humans give birth, sort of. Little difference. Well, here's the story. The Easter Bunny, also from the official source of the world, Wikipedia, is a folkloric figure and symbol of Easter, depicted as a rabbit bringing Easter eggs, originating among German Lutherans So if you've got to blame someone for Easter Bunny, German Lutherans. They were the first ones. They were the first Protestants, you know, against the Catholic Church, because Martin Luther was the big, started the big Protestant movement. And of course, those people that followed him were referred to by his name as Lutherans. There you go. Anyway, the German Lutherans at some point, maybe not Martin Luther, the Easter hare, hare, H-A-R-E, you know, I'll read it as Easter rabbit from now on, originally played the role of a judge in the Lutheran, early Lutheran history, evaluating whether children were good or disobedient in behavior at the start of the season of Eastertide. Sort of like Santa Claus knows if you've been naughty or nice. The Easter Bunny finds out if you've been naughty or nice and makes a decision there. Now, the Easter Bunny also is sometimes depicted with clothes on. Oh, yeah. Pretty formal. In legend, the creature also carries colored eggs in his basket, candy, and sometimes also toys to the homes of children, and as such shows similarities to Santa Claus or the Christ kind. I'm not sure what that refers to. One word, Christ kind, as they both bring gifts to children on the night before their respective holidays. The custom was first mentioned in a writing in Germany in 1682 entitled About Easter Eggs. So that was the first time anybody wrote about it, referred to a German tradition of an Easter rabbit bringing Easter eggs for the children. So thank you to German people. Okay. And why rabbit? Rabbit was a popular motif in medieval church art, too. In ancient times, it was widely believed by many Romans, Greeks, Pliny, Plutarch, Philostratus, and Aelian, it says here, A-E-L-I-A-N, that the rabbit was a hermaphrodite. Well, that's wrong. Okay. Look it up, folks. The idea that a hare could reproduce without loss of virginity, which is wrong, that's fake news, folks, led to an association with the Virgin Mary. So now you know. See how misled you can be by fake news? With rabbits sometimes occurring in illuminated manuscripts and Northern European paintings of the Virgin and the Christ child. So it was a symbol of virginity. Because how could they give birth to so many baby rabbits so fast? They couldn't do it just naturally. I mean, like humans, right? Okay. Well, as it turns out, sometimes even they're associated with the Holy Trinity, as in when they have three rabbits together in some of these middle age paintings. And eggs, like rabbits and hares, are fertility symbols of all, way back from antiquity. That's a long time ago, antiquity. Since birds lay eggs and rabbits give birth to large litters in the early spring, these became symbols of the rising fertility of the earth at the vernal equinox, the beginning of spring, of course. As we know, rabbits are both prolific breeders. Female hares can conceive a second litter of offspring while still pregnant with the first. Wow. That which, again, humans can't do, so it must seem pretty remarkable. So this phenomenon actually has a name, so write this down. Superfetation. Superfetation. Lagomorphs mature sexually at an early age and can give birth to several litters a year. Hence the saying to breed like rabbits or to breed like bunnies. It is therefore not surprising that rabbits and hares should become fertility symbols, or that their springtime mating antics should enter into Easter folklore. Now, eggs. In addition, Orthodox churches, that is, Eastern religious practices, Eastern Roman Catholic Church became the Orthodox Church, okay, sort of just generalizing here wildly. The Orthodox churches have a custom of abstaining from eggs during the fast of Lent. So not meat, necessarily, like the usual abstentions on Fridays were in the Catholic Church. Or for some people in Lent, they give up meat for Lent. But in the Orthodox Church, you would abstain from eggs. The only way to keep them from being wasted was to boil or roast them and begin eating them to break the fast. So, because you keep boiled eggs longer before they wouldn't spoil. So you would boil eggs during that period and then have a couple dozen boiled eggs to eat. Didn't waste the eggs, in other words. Because you can't hold the chickens back from laying them, right? So that's how you go. Okay. And as a special dish, those eggs, they would probably have been decorated as part of the celebrations. Later German Protestants, the Protestants, those Lutherans and so on again, retained the custom of eating colored eggs for Easter, though they did not continue the tradition of fasting. Eggs boiled with some flowers changed their color, bringing the spring into the homes, and some over time added the custom of decorating the eggs. Many Christians of the Orthodox Church to this day typically dye their Easter eggs red, the color of blood, in recognition of the blood of the sacrificed Christ. That's kind of morbid, but oh well, and of the renewal of life in the springtime. Symbolically, we're just talking that, so yeah. Some also use the color green in honor of the new foliage emerging from the long-dead time of winter. The Ukrainian art of decorating eggs for Easter, known as Pysanky, P-Y-S-A-N-K-Y, dates to ancient pre-Christian times. Similar variants of this form of artwork are seen amongst other Eastern and Central European cultures, such as my relatives in the Czech Republic. Yep. So Ukrainian, Czech, Slovak, and so on, probably Polish also. You can buy decorated wooden eggs online easily, some of them follow the Russian tradition too, of fitting inside of each other, whatever that's called, like four or five eggs, each one is smaller, one inside the other, sort of a combination of traditions there. But that decoration of eggs for Easter, and even decorating more permanent types of either china or usually wooden eggs for decoration on Easter comes from this idea that, number one, eggs represent fertility, and I don't know why, again, you'd abstain for eggs during the fast of Lent, but nonetheless, wanting to eat them like crazy before they spoil, after you boil them and made hard-boiled eggs at the end, you'd want to have a special feast. Because you'd be really hungry after Lent and want to get some egg protein in yourself. So why not decorate and so on? So that answers the two burning questions of the day. Always glad to fill you in on that here on the WHFR Journal. Everybody in Dearborn obviously wants to know that. And now back to more mundane things in the next 10 minutes that we have to go in the hour. One of the stories I wanted to mention was a real great success here, is that the Dearborn schools have, and this is from data released by the state of Michigan, graduation rates for the Dearborn public schools have increased over a five-year period from 76% in 2011 to 93% in 2016. During the same period, dropout rates have decreased 72%. In 2011, there was a total of 113 dropouts compared to 32. Only 32 students dropped out in 2015 to 2016. Obviously, Superintendent Glenn Maleko is very happy about that. It was part of a district-wide effort that began with the youngest students in preschool and kindergarten and extends through the high school years to keep them in school. Because you can't do too much today without a high school degree. And even a high school degree, you can't do too much with. I was reading some stories this week about job markets in the future. If you don't have a master's degree, you're going to be in a lot of trouble in a few years. Well, that means high school degree, that means college degree, four-year college degree, and that means at least a year or two more years to get a master's degree in some area in order to stay employable for at least a few more years beyond that, before the rise of the robots, of course. Of course, the Dearborn schools have a variety of programs, Collegiate Academy, two different early college programs, both involving Henry Ford College, and we're happy to host those. Several career and technical ed options, too, and they also operate the Dearborn Center for Math, Science, and Technology. They do work out dual enrollment, which could be without a special program here at Henry Ford College and in the high school at the same time. And also advanced placement, too. That all helps to keep students motivated and focused on completing high school. Additional staff members such as the graduation intervention specialist, it's capital G, capital I, capital S, who were added in 2010-2011. They work directly with students beginning as soon as the ninth grade to make sure that they're staying on track for graduation. So they're getting personal counseling attention. And I'm glad it can happen so quickly. Unfortunately, in the state of Michigan, it's not happening quite so quickly. In 2011, only 74%, a little over 74%, graduated from high school in Michigan. And in 2016, it's improved by 5 points to 79%. Whereas Dearborn went from 76% in 2011 to 92%. And that's fantastic. Great change. I hope whatever we've done can be communicated to other communities. I hope they can all get their own GIS staff members, graduation intervention specialist, in order to help students stay in school. It's extremely important to get as much education as you can, and there's a lot of wonderful choices. And there's, you know, you can find something that's interesting and exciting to do. Okay. I know my daughter, when she was still in high school, she said, I don't really want to study much. My teachers aren't very interesting. She just said it in 10th grade. And there was a couple of problems. One, they put her in the wrong track of education. They put her on the dummy track. Oh, was I mad when I found that out. That was colloquial terms, of course. In other words, as if she was one of the least intelligent, least motivated students in the school. Not true at all. In my humble opinion, as her father. And she's gone on to get a master's degree, and she's been teaching in Southfield Public Schools for almost 2 decades now, and a very good student. Well, of course, I said to her, before I knew about the scheduling problem within the Dearborn Public Schools, that they put her on the dummy track without telling me or her mother. Anyway, you know, even if a teacher is not presenting the material in the most interesting or entertaining way, there's a good reason there's that class. It's information you probably need to know. So I always felt, and sometimes I encountered a teacher in high school or in college that I wasn't getting a lot out of. But I said, I'm going to learn this in spite of the teacher. Okay. I mean, I don't care. You know, this is important, obviously. Math is important. Science is important. English, literature, writing, communication is important. I'm not going to let a teacher hold me back because they can't quite express something in the way that I prefer. And that often happens. Of course, in college, you have a lot more choices of programs and teachers. I always was very picky about my teachers and classes. And if I didn't like a class in the first week, either teacher or syllabus, I dropped out and I took something else. I always had a backup plan. And so I got the kind of education that I wanted, that I was most challenged by, because I was in charge of my own life. I was in charge of my own classes. In high school, you started to take what they give you. By the way, my daughter, after we found out this problem in the 10th grade, she did have a science teacher or a math teacher that recognized that she shouldn't have been in this, you know, lowest level class situation, that she was smart and bright. And he actually brought it to our attention, and he actually got the counseling staff to redirect her. So most of her last 2 years of high school in Dearborn, she was in the college prep track or whatever you want to call it. Thank goodness. How she had to suffer for 2 years with people who were just not at her level. No wonder she was somewhat disillusioned and turned off by education. So congratulations to Dearborn Public Schools. And they're going to keep going because 93% is not 100%. And absolutely, we've got to help everybody learn as much as they can in many different ways. Just a couple minutes to go, so I'm going to give you some updates on things coming up. Monday is actually, somebody has said, it's Conservation Day. Okay. Now, a week from tomorrow, the 22nd, is Earth Day. We've got a special guest coming on the show next week, the sustainability coordinator for the city of Dearborn himself, Dave Norwood is going to be here to talk to us on this show all about how we can become more sustainable, what initiatives the city has been doing, and what he's been coming up with through grants and a variety of community support. So I'm excited to find out about those initiatives and what's going to be happening that maybe we can help with, too, right before Earth Day hits us. But Conservation Day here at Henry Ford College this Monday, April 17th, from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. in the Berry Auditorium. That's at Conference Center we mentioned earlier with Diane Green, Building L. Free parking. Topics will include water conservation and energy management. So two great speakers will present probably an hour each, and also information about HFC's environmental studies program will be distributed, of course, if you want to major in environmental studies. What do we need more in this world besides health career people? We need people helping to improve the environment in spite of the lack of federal interest or funding or understanding. So I think those careers are going to be very important in the future, and we're going to realize it too. So two great lectures by people that know here on campus, Henry Ford College, Building L, main campus, Evergreen Road, south of Ford Row, for free, 1:30 to 3:30 p.m., Berry Auditorium within our Missouri Conference Center, Building L. Okay. Tonight, real quick, I'm going to mention it quickly, but it's a whole great evening. Kicks off the Italian Film Festival, which begins here at the college with free presentations of feature films and documentaries tonight, starting at 7 p.m., where almost made it through the hour without taking a drink of tea, of course. At 7 p.m. tonight, there's going to be a presentation of a documentary all about the Andrea Doria. It was a true story of the Italian passenger liner, which was broadside of another ship near Nantucket Island in 1956. And we're going to have someone speaking with that, one of the survivors of that catastrophe. And so she's going to be talking in addition to the documentary being shown. There's also going to be one Saturday night at 5 p.m., again, Building L, I assume, and Saturday night at 7:30 p.m., also free. So the 5 p.m. is called Where the Clouds Go, which is a fiction film, and Italian Race, another fiction film, Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. Now, the films are in Italian, but they're going to be subtitled. So all free, happening tonight and tomorrow on our campus. It is the Italian Film Festival that will be in other places around town, too, in the future weeks, but Henry Ford College tonight and tomorrow. That's all the time we have for now. This is WHFR Dearborn. Come on back next Friday. And as we're playing the theme for Highway 61, I want you to think about our loss here, because I think about it a lot. John Conroy, my co-host on the show for the last couple of years, and our WHFR volunteer news director and sports director, passed away last Friday. And several of us on the staff were able to get to his funeral mass on Tuesday. So John Conroy is gone, but not forgotten, certainly. So we'll go on. This is WHFR Dearborn, as I said, and coming right up, The Best in the Blues with Kitty Love, Highway 61. Take care out there.